It's my favorite time of week, favorite time of day, favorite time on Sunday. Welcome, everyone, to our Course in Miracles study group. I'm so excited that we have all come together again to strengthen these loving ideas in our own minds and allow our own minds to be healed, thus healing others and the world. Let's begin by pausing and turning our attention within. And taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And bringing our attention to our own sense of willingness. Our willingness to experience joy. Our willingness to experience unshakable peace. Our willingness to give our beliefs, our perceptions, everything that we think we see. Our willingness to give this to Spirit within. And thereby asking for the miracle instead. That healing perception that shows us that we are one, that we are eternal, and that love is truly all there is. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives. And we place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. So again, taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And with the love in your heart and light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Alrighty. So we're going to dive into our reading where we left off last week. If you have the Sparkle Edition, we're on page 425. At the very top of the page, the first full paragraph starts with a sentence, "The truth will save you." We're actually going to begin at the sentence right before that, so the end of the previous paragraph. That corresponds to the original edition, chapter 18, part 2. Paragraph number 7. Again, it starts with "the truth will save you," and then just go one sentence backwards from that. We'll read the last paragraph of that previous, the last sentence of that previous paragraph. And this corresponds to chapter 18 in the FIP, in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. It's chapter 18, part 1, paragraph number 7. And I love this. This is where we ended. We ended with this sentence last week. This is beautiful, a beautiful way to pick up our call. "When you seem to see some twisted form of the original error rise to frighten you, say only, 'God is not fear, but love,' and it will disappear." The truth will save you. It has not left you to go out into the mad world and so depart from you. Inward is sanity. Insanity is outside you. You but believe it is the other way, that truth is outside and error and guilt within. Your little senseless substitutions, touched with insanity and swirling lightly off on a mad course like feathers dancing insanely in the wind, have no substance. They fuse and merge and separate in shifting and totally meaningless patterns which need not be judged at all. To judge them individually is pointless. Their tiny differences in form are no real differences at all. None of them matters. That they have in common and nothing else. Yet what else is necessary to make them all the same? I'm going to read actually the next paragraph too. Let them all go, dancing in the wind, dipping and turning till they disappear from sight, far, far outside you, and turn you to the stately calm within, where in holy stillness dwells the living God you never left and who never left you. The Holy Spirit takes you gently by the hand and retraces with you your mad journey outside yourself, leading you gently back to the truth and safety within. He brings all your insane projections and your wild substitutions, which you have placed outside you, to the truth. Thus, he reverses the course of insanity and restores you to reason. So this is awesome. We're going to pause there and talk about this. There's a lot here. It starts off with saying that the truth will save you. It hasn't left us to go out into the mad world and depart from us. Inward is sanity. Insanity is outside you. We're taught differently, right? We're taught that outside is what is sane and that, you know, is a picture that needs to look a certain way for us to be okay, and that inward is scary. Yet the Course is saying so clearly here that inward is where we will find sanity. The insanity is what's outside. And obviously that's not hard to agree with at all because of all the crazy things that happen in the world, on the news, every single day. I love how it equates our little senseless substitutions touched with insanity, like those feathers dancing in the wind. And those senseless, where it says your little senseless substitutions, that's kind of the whole world as we see it. It's these little things that we've made and that don't seem so little to us that we've made as substitutes for the love of God, that we've made to bring our awareness outside of ourselves to be preoccupied with this mad dream that we're having rather than finding the truth, and which is what is true. So it's saying to judge any of it individually is pointless. The tiny differences in form are no real differences at all. They don't matter. It's about us taking our feathers and giving the feathers, the crazy mad feathers, to Holy Spirit for that shift in perception, for that restoration of love in our awareness as we learn how to release those blocks within through Holy Spirit. I love the sentence in the next paragraph, the second paragraph that we read, and turn you to the stately calm within, where in holy stillness dwells the living God you never left and who never left you. How beautiful is that? That really, really strikes me. I love how it says the living God, because it, to me, in my heart, I immediately feel that aliveness, that these aren't just words. I have more to share, but I'm going to actually pause there because I feel like I've been talking a lot. I want to see if anybody else has anything coming up for you so far.
So when you're stuck, I think I know what you're going to say, but when you're stuck, like in self-judgment, right, you're stuck, what do you do?
What do you think I'm going to say?
Holy Spirit, help me.
Yes.
Help me.
Yes, yes, yes. Yep. I mean, think about it as like, you know, we're caught in or on those dancing, twirling feathers, and we're trying to hang on and like force those things into making some kind of sense or forcing them to be a certain way, when all we have to do, what we're being asked to do, is just, again, give it all to Holy Spirit. Let those feathers go. Give all of our stuff to Holy Spirit, because that's where the healing comes. We can't fix ourselves. We need a sane thought system outside of our insane thought system to help us out of this. And so it is always about calling on the Holy Spirit. You got it, Brian.
And then, yeah, And then the reality, and I think you mentioned this last week, about giving problems to the Holy Spirit actually is much better than therapy, than like trying to analyze every nook and cranny of your background in extended either rational emotive therapy or any of the different therapies. I think I heard you right. Didn't you say that?
I have no idea what I said, but I will say this. I don't remember at all. We have to be where we're at. And now I'm saying this as a licensed counselor. I'm a therapist by training, and I worked in a counseling center for 10 years. Ultimately, the course says clearly, the Holy Spirit, this is a direct quote, the Holy Spirit is the only therapist. So it is that sane part of our minds, because the Holy Spirit is nothing outside of us. It's our own right mind that hasn't forgotten the truth and the love that we are, that we learn to work with to help us out of our insane part of our mind. And therapy, you know, the course does say you don't need to follow fear through all of its circuitous routes to let it be undone, that it really just is about not hanging on to it and handing it over. But we have to be where we're at. So there were times in my own life when I felt like I needed to work through some stuff from the past to move on. I felt like I needed more of a traditional therapy setting to be able to do some letting go. I felt a bit stuck. So I'm not at all anti-therapy. I think it definitely serves its purpose and its place, because we have to be where we're at if that's what we need at the time. But ultimately, it is about doing this inner work with our inner teacher. And this is, you know, the difference with like cognitive behavioral therapy, which was, I was trained a lot in that. That's about changing your thoughts, disputing your irrational beliefs. And again, that can be helpful for where we're at. But the course is teaching us that we don't need to take on the job of the Holy Spirit. Let the Holy Spirit do its job, which is transforming, you know, taking our fearful perceptions that we give, giving us back the loving perception. That change happens through Holy Spirit rather than us trying to do it ourselves, which is more of like a cognitive behavioral therapy. So I'm not knocking it at all. I think it serves its purpose, and you know, I've needed to do traditional therapy at points in my life. But the pathway of the course is teaching us about a deeper part of our own mind that we can work with too. And it doesn't have to be either or, you know, it can be both.
Right. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
especially too, because
it's...
Igor, I'll let you chime in just a moment. Especially because if we're so blocked in fear that we can't hear the Holy Spirit ourselves, the course says Holy Spirit will speak through others. So that can be a way of thinking about therapy. If we're too blocked to hear, you know, help ourselves, then maybe it can come through the other person. So, Igor, please share.
Yeah, it's a good remark about psychotherapy, because in the psychotherapy pamphlet, yeah, there is this psychotherapy pamphlet along with the Song of Prayer pamphlet. And in the psychotherapy pamphlet, Jesus says that psychotherapy is the only type of therapy there is. So, because he says, because only the mind is sick, so only the mind needs to be healed. So, and the whole course was given to psychotherapists, right? So psychotherapy is, and the whole course is very practical, although it's a kind of, you know, if you say officially, it's a kind of non-dualistic spiritual teaching, la la la, but it is so practical that it is much more closer to psychotherapy than to religions or spiritual teachings, because it is so practical. Retraining the mind. Take your experiences in your life and apply this genuine forgiveness process. Retraining, healing our minds. So yes, psychotherapy is a big thing. Another thing that there is a section in chapter 9, as far as I remember, in chapter 9, section 5, in the third edition at least, called Unhealed Healer. And there Jesus says about Unhealed Healer, and that's why Brian, right? He
yeah.
said these sessions are better than psychotherapies because usual traditional psychotherapy is done by unhealed healers, and then there in this section Jesus says what is the problem with unhealed healers who try to do psychotherapy. So yeah, and so what I want to say that we can take the whole course as psychotherapy, and Holy Spirit as the main psychotherapist.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I totally agree with you. Thank you so much, Igor. I totally agree.
And also, about the paragraph, first paragraph you read, Corinne, sentences 4 and 5, inward is sanity, and sanity is outside you. But you believe it is the other way. The truth is outside and error and guilt within. So really, we think that there is nothing worthy inside of us, right? We think we're trash. Well, usually people think. And the only thing that worth living for, worth dying for, worth striving for is outside. Yeah? Your government, your children, your family, your, I don't know, something, right? And this is again and again and again subject of idols. And again, all the way up to chapter 29, Jesus comes as close to this topic of idols, but he doesn't even mentioning this word idol because it is such a sophisticated and dear topic for us. So we think that the idols, the only thing worthy is outside, and inside is trash. So, but Jesus says in the workbook lesson number 70, he says, my salvation comes from me. And I think I can paraphrase it, my happiness comes from me, my happiness. So we think that we are unhappy and we can be happy when we reach some idol, yeah? When we make a big family, when we make $1 billion, when we get the Oscar, or I don't know, anything, right? When we reach this idol. But it doesn't work, unfortunately. So the only way to get happy is to go within, not the outside. Okay, thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. The only way to be happy is to touch, is to more than touch, but to increasingly become aware of the holy stillness within, where dwells the living God you never left and who never left you. That just, I feel this just like electric aliveness in my heart with that sentence. I absolutely love it. Thank you, Igor. Does anybody else have anything to share? Or questions or insights? The other piece that I felt moved to share that struck me as I was reading this, I think I reread this before our call, but I read it last week also, where it says, the Holy Spirit, it's that next sentence after what I just read, the Holy Spirit takes you gently by the hand and retraces with you your mad journey outside yourself, leading you gently back to the truth and safety within. He brings all your insane projections and your wild substitutions which you have placed outside you to the truth. He thus reverses the course of insanity and restores you to reason. When I was reading that, I think it was last week, it hit me for the first time that, as you all know that I've shared, I have gone through periods of being obsessed with reading near-death experience stories from different people, and because they've been so helpful to me. And this idea of a life review, which I'm sure you've heard before through near-death stories of you know, people having this, like, you know, review of kind of going through their lives, and even in pop culture with, what's that Christmas story with the grumpy old man?
It's the Christmas Carol.
Scrooge.
It's a Christmas
Carol. Yeah, with Scrooge. Yep, even that idea of being taken through all these different scenarios. I've always had sort of a feeling of like, gosh, if that happens, like I don't want to feel guilty about anything, you know? So I want to do everything right. And I realized reading this that, again, the Holy Spirit's not going to do anything to increase guilt, where it says here, the Holy Spirit takes you gently by the hand and retraces with you your mad journey outside yourself, leading you gently back to the truth and safety within. It's not to experience guilt to, you know, look at something we did wrong. It's to show us and for us to see that, oh, I don't want this. No, that doesn't make me happy. I don't know if this is helpful, but this is one of those just little insights that I had for myself, that it's our choice to see that we don't want this. Nothing gets taken away from us. Nothing, you know, gets undone unless we want it to be undone. It's a falling away because we choose. We make that decision that we don't want it anymore. And the closest example that I can come up with to that I think I've shared before, was that I grew up in the Florida Keys and have always sort of held this rosy glass, you know, glasses, looking like, oh, you know, I'm a displaced Floridian living in New Jersey, and kind of held this like rosy view of, you know, the past and my time living down there. And I went down there for my high school reunion last summer, and it felt as if it was almost like I had that chance to just kind of like look again at everything that I, all the meaning that I put onto it. And it was as if that part of my life just folded up and collapsed and fell away. Like, I have no rose-colored glasses anymore. Like, I have no attachments. I feel totally free of everything that went on, both good and bad, when I lived down there. And so that's the closest actual example that I have to what I'm sharing here. But it was just a little aha moment for me. We decide that we don't want it. We realize it doesn't make us happy.
What I was going to add was this: listening to what you were saying, what it also sounded like, and what's been coming to me like more clearly this week, is the fact that they're all stories, and the stories originate from us feeling separated, us thinking that there's actually a separate I engaging in these stories, when it actually isn't, when actually we're united and one with the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful. That, because I used to kind of look at at what was outside as the illusion, but actually we are the illusion. We are the illusion inside, thinking that we're a separate individual or a separate person, when actually we're one with the Holy Spirit, one with God. We never were separated. So the illusion actually starts with us accepting that.
It's that belief in our own mind that we are a person.
Yes. Yes.
You talk about near-death experiences and how they comfort you. There is wonderful book, and I don't know why it's not more widely read, because I went on Amazon to see, and there was only 6 reviews, and people have often, and some of the reviews said, why isn't this book read? You know, it's like one of the greatest books ever written. It's called Secret Splendor, The Journey Within, and you can get it for 19 cents at some of those used bookstores in good condition. But this man was on a search for reality. He almost drove himself crazy, you know, seeking for it. But he talks about duality and how the mind cannot know. It just cannot know. And he talks about the soul being, you know, what it is. But when he starts seeing reality, it is unbelievable. And he doesn't go anywhere. His first one, if I'll just take a minute, is so gorgeous. As he's walking past a flower shop, he said for some reason he's feeling a great sense of peace. And he looks in this flower shop, and there's this luminescent quality around one of these flowers and so forth. And he looks, and he can see this living essence in this flower. And it's flowing through the veins. And I'm shortening this because the description of this is incredible. And he says, he saw that there was this form behind the flower that was eternal, that was always there, and that flower had always existed and would always exist even when that form that looked like the flower was gone. And then he said he looked at that flower, and there was something in the flower that had a consciousness, and it was smiling at him. And he said he got this affinity for it, and he said, this joy just welled up in me that he couldn't explain. And he was walking home, and he started saying, boy, this is a sure sign, you know, I'm losing it, because he was afraid he was losing his mind. But anyway, and he turned around, and he says, no, I'm going to go back and check. Well, it was gone. But when he went home, then the real experience started. And you have to get this book to read what this man experienced of everyday.
It's called Secret Splendor, did you say?
Called The Secret Splendor, The Journey Within.
Awesome.
And it's by Charles Ernest Essert. It is
awesome.
Magnificent. He goes.
It's
to
so class. Cool. Oh, go on.
He travels the universe. He communes with God. He says, I am one, but yet I am one with the Creator. He could go anywhere he wanted. He could see that there was a line of force that was connecting each and every person with this eternal Creator. But people had no idea that they were connected to this infinite intelligence. And he just goes on and on about how you have to know to let go of your mind, come to a place of peace, and get to know your soul.
Mm.
It is
awesome.
Gorgeous. He said when he went back to his apartment, this beautiful rhythm of song started radiating within him, that it was not of him. He woke up and the birds were singing, and he said the only way I can describe it was love, and it's just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
Well, I'm sold. Thank you so much, Sue, for the recommendation.
When he says something about there is a world beyond this world that I that I want, or I do not want anything of this world. And people kind of get afraid of that because what would be
beyond
this
world?
Like, there's nothing beyond this world. You know, it's like it's a vapory nothingness because it's an illusion. No, it's this incredible, incredible reality of life that is just smiling at you, connecting with you. You know everything, and you've known everything from eternity.
The parallels of what I've heard you describe to the Course, just to highlight a couple of them, with the how he described that flower having a luminescent quality, makes me think of how the Course says that you'll experience light episodes. You'll see tiny, you know, rims of light around things that you ordinarily see because you're loosening hold on your way of seeing. You're opening up to the truth behind the picture. This is like a cardboard cutout, and it's that living presence behind the cardboard cutouts. We get fixated thinking that these cardboard cutouts are life, whereas it's you know, the eternal nature behind the cardboard cutout that is, you know,
right. And this man
shining
is smart.
Through. So
the only reality you can see is the reality that you have constructed. You have to
mm-hmm.
absolutely let that go and become a child. You just have to
awesome.
Do it.
Awesome.
And
I
know
love
this...
how... Oh, go on, Nick.
I was saying, you know what this reminds me a bit of? I know I started this self-esteem prophecy, but I also rented the movie. And in the movie, special effects also rendered a representation of that luminosity in nature, the light. And as you were speaking of that, that's what I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting. I know at one time when I was in the city, I don't know what had happened to me, but all of a sudden, I don't know if I mentioned this, and I'll just be brief. It was around the time that cherry blossoms were blooming. And all of a sudden, I looked at a cherry blossom tree, and it wasn't, I didn't see it the way I'd ever seen it before. It was like so alive, and the consciousness of it just drew me in, and all I wanted to do was just sit down in front of the tree and just be there with it. I really can't explain how it seems so different. And I was with someone, and I was just watching it, and he said, come on, we have to go. And I said, okay. So then I really was reluctant to leave. But then as I walked away, the next tree had that same quality. And every tree I came to had that quality, and I kept hesitating because it was I really felt the aliveness of it. And and I had this connection to it. And finally what happened was my friend said, we've got to get back to New Jersey, so what I want you to do is just cast your eyes to the sidewalk so that you won't see anything that is drawing you into it. And then we passed some garbage, and he started making fun of me and was saying, well, do you see the beauty in that also? But it was just an amazing experience, and it was so beautiful that the next day I wanted to repeat it, and I went back to the same spot, and the trees looked normal again. They just looked like trees, you know. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that brilliance anymore, and there wasn't that. They were just so alive. Like, I really can't explain it.
Yeah, that's when we know, when we don't have words, we know that we've experienced a holy instant, and we can't make it happen. Just like you said, you noticed that it changed. We get these glimpses here, you know. We get the glimpses, and we can just set up, through our willingness, the conditions for a holy instant to happen, but we can't make it happen. So that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Corinne?
I think did I hear Homera?
It was me, but if somebody else was talking to, so whoever wants to go first, that's fine. I can
okay.
wait.
Igor, do you want to go first?
Yes, thank you. And I wanted to say about one of the previous statements that we are illusions, yeah? And it's something I can relate to because I fell into this trap, because to think that we all are illusions, or especially that everyone else is an illusion. And so on a Russian Course in Miracles community, I would show up and say, hello, illusions. How are you enjoying your illusory lives today? Yeah, I was having a lot of fun. I was having a lot of fun doing that. But the problem with this thing is that Jesus, in many places in the workbook, he says, giving and receiving, yeah? To give and to receive, is one in truth. So how we perceive others, we the same we perceive ourselves. So if we think that everyone is an illusion, then we will end up thinking that I am an illusion too. And this is not true. We are not illusions. We are the spirit, the perfect one, Son of God. Yeah? Innocent,
and
perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the and Jesus mentions it in several places. For example, in chapter 20, section 7, paragraph 8, he says, "Your holy brother, sight of whom is your release, is no illusion." Yeah. So and Jesus often says to see the Christ, yeah, to see the Christ in our brother. And also in chapter 28, section 4, that's where you can really look up on this topic. Chapter 28, section 4, from the very beginning, he says, "He is not brother, your brother, he's not brother made by what he dreams, nor is his body hero of the dream, is your brother. It is his reality that is your brother." The spirit, yeah? The spirit, the Son of God. "It is his reality that is your brother, as is yours reality is brother to him. Your mind and his are joined in brotherhood. His body and his dreams but seem to make a little gap where yours have joined with his." So we are not illusions in truth. We're not illusions because we are the spirit, Holy Son of God. But we perceive illusions. Yeah, this is absolutely true. We perceive illusions, those bodies, those forms. So if we think of others as totality, as the Holy Son of God, which is, you know, which entered this illusion, but nonetheless it's not real. Yeah, we overlook those illusions, those bodies, those sins, and we perceive sinlessness, innocence, perfection. That's what Jesus really wants from us. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Igor. Thank you so much. That was great. And it is a matter of distinguishing between the you know, capital S self and the lowercase S self. And I know that when I think it was Sue that was sharing before, was speaking to the capital S self, you know, not being the illusion. So thank you for highlighting that and bringing that out.
That was me, Corinne. That was Meg.
Oh, I'm sorry,
yes.
Meg. I'm sorry.
That was me. And just I wanted to add this, that there are levels of us experiencing, and we experience ourself as self, the small self in this realm, because that's how we navigate and get around. But there are also levels where we experience ourselves as one. And on the level that we experience ourselves as one, it is not the same as us experiencing ourselves as a self. So,
right.
Yes, and when we experience ourselves as a self, we think of ourselves as concrete. But on the level of oneness, everything is just oneness. And everything, including the Course of Miracles, are actually just pointers to be let go of once we have reached that level. Because all the teachings are only pointers, and none of them are, this is what I'm seeing. And this is actually what the Course of Miracles is saying too, that there comes a point when you have to let the Course of Miracles go. And just be one with the oneness that you really are.
Thank you, Meg.
You're welcome.
And I'll just say, and then I want to let Homera speak, and then we're going to get back to reading, that the Course is sometimes so confusing for us because the Course speaks in different levels. Sometimes it's talking about this level of form. Other times it's talking about the level, you know, of truth. And so for those of us, you know, reading it, we can sometimes get a little bit confused by that until we start getting the hang of, you know, this coursey language. So, Homera.
Yeah, hi, Corinne. Thank you.
Hi.
Everybody's share has been so great. What you said earlier really, what you read actually from the book really resonated with me, where it said the Holy Spirit takes you gently by the hand and retraces you with your mad journey outside yourself, leading you gently back to the truth and safety within. And the reason it resonated with me is I've been sort of in a really kind of funky place, dark place for a while, and I'm just, you know, I was talking to my husband earlier, and I was asking him, well, you know, the Course keeps saying all I need is this little willingness, and I'm willing. Why am I not feeling like the Holy Spirit is talking to me? I'm still, you know, getting these bouts of depression or anxiety. And, you know, he said, you may be thinking you're willing, but maybe it's not, you're not really willing. And then I said, and it just kind of, something came on, like a light came on, and I said, you know, I say to God, I say to Holy Spirit all the time, you know, help me see the truth. I'm willing to surrender everything, but then I take it back all the time because I'm so scared. And one of the things that came to my mind was when I had read a book by Marianne Williamson, I think it was A Return to Love, a few years ago, and I remember she saying at one point where she was talking to God and she was asking for help, and then she'd get better and then she'd go back to what she was doing. And then at one point she got on her knees and she said, okay, I surrender. And she said, God just busted me, like busted everything. And like that, because the foundation was so faulty that everything had to go. And I said, that is so scary because he said, well, what are you holding on to? I mean, I couldn't answer that, but I think it's in that I'm stuck, you know, because I'm reading the course, I'm doing the lessons, you know, yes, I fall off for a few weeks, but I go back to it, you know, I'm really trying to practice the principles, and yet I'm not experiencing like what Igor was talking about earlier, this, like, I sense an understanding from people that are talking that is so much deeper than what I've gotten so far from the course. And I know you said, you know, you can only be where you're at, but I guess my question is, how can I break through this, maybe this holding on to this illusion and not having that little willing? I mean, I think I'm willing, but then if I was, I guess I would be experiencing what you all are experiencing, right?
You're asking great questions.
So many questions. Good questions.
So many good questions. And I'm going to offer a few thoughts initially. And one, okay, the first thing that comes forward, I guess this all... I know, I have so many thoughts going through my head. I'm going to get quiet for a moment and just pick one.
I would say one thought, if you let me, Corinne.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah. Excuse me, what is your name again?
Homera.
Homera, wow, interesting name. So you said you wanted to surrender, you want willingness, yeah? This little willingness,
yes.
Jesus talks about.
Yes.
So willingness to surrender or say, This is not practical. What this little willingness is willingness to be happy. You see? This is the
You nailed it.
Yeah.
You see? This is because when you are thinking, oh, I'm such a bad student, I used to think that too in the workbook when this few lessons where Jesus says, today is the special day. Oh, today you're going to hear the voice of God. Oh, it's a day of celebration. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like excited. Oh, yeah, today I'm going to hear the... And all the way they goes, and in the evening I think, oh, yeah, I'm such a shitty student. Oh, I couldn't hear anything. Maybe I should stop studying it. Maybe I should start all over again. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I should just go fall off out of building, you know? So, and this is what the ego wants. This is the ego's trap, to make us feel guilty, to make us feel unworthy, bad student, and anything, to stop studying it and stuff like that. This is the trap. And what another thing, what okay, so this, just one sentence, willingness to be happy. That's what you need. But that's what we all need. We want to be happy, and we don't want to suffer, feel depressions or anything. We just want to be happy. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Igor. Okay, so a couple things that I want to say is, first, you mentioned that there was this idea of God busting up everything, I think, for Marianne Williamson from that book, or she maybe said something that, like, it all sort of fell apart, and that feeling so scary.
Yes.
We have to look with Holy Spirit at the beliefs in our own mind that God is fearful and that God would do anything to upset us or anything to ruffle our feathers. There's all these, and I actually wrote a blog post about this. There's so many phrases in our culture. God doesn't give you more than you can handle. God takes away the good to make room for the better. All these sayings that used to actually somehow comfort me, I don't know how, upon closer looking at them, that's perpetuating a belief that God does things to us that can cause us pain. God is only love, 100%. God does not do anything ever to cause pain. Pain only comes from our belief that we're separate selves. That's it. So any belief that we become aware of, it's actually awesome that you said that, you know, she said that God busted everything and that seems really scary. It's awesome that you can identify that that's scary, because now then the task is to start looking at what's coming up, looking at the beliefs that are coming to the surface, to look at those beliefs with Holy Spirit. So saying, okay, there's a belief in my mind that, God, you're going to take things away from me and that you're really going to stir up the pot and that you're going to turn things upside down. I have a belief like that in my mind. Holy Spirit, I'm owning it. Here you go. And asking for that shift instead. Now, the course does talk about the development of trust. If you go into the Manual for Teachers, it's an awesome section called the Development of Trust. And one of the phases is like a period of undoing where it seems like things might be falling away or it seems like the shit is really hitting the fan. For me, my period of undoing always came in the form of anxiousness, severe anxiousness about something. But having the context of that section to see that's not where we end, that's not where we're going to stay, was always very helpful for me to kind of, you know, see those different periods. And it's not God doing the period of undoing. It's your own decision that, you know, you want to be happy and that, you know, the things are going to, you can choose to let things fall away that no longer serve you. And it's only the part of the mind that, you know, doesn't like change and wants things to stay permanent that can get a little, you know, freaked out by the idea of changing. But there, even there, is a belief that we can say, oh, I'm afraid of change. Here's another belief, you know, to look at with the Holy Spirit, or another fear. Now, the Course also says that we freak out when there's change, because change, our first experience of change was the separation. And so every change that happens in our life, we react as if it's further separation. It freaks us out and brings up, you know, fear and guilt. So that's, again, one other thing that I wanted to add. So what you said, how can I break through this holding on? There's a little practice that I did a video blog about once, and I feel moved to share this now, that if you get a box or a jar with a lid, and whatever it is that you feel that you're not letting go of, if you write that down on a piece of paper, and if you say to yourself, okay, if I put this paper into this box, or if I put this paper into this jar, that means that I'm giving it to Holy Spirit, and it means I'm not going to pick it back up again. The first thing you can do is notice what fears come up. So if I fully put this, you know, whatever it is that I wrote on this paper, if I am going to totally give this to Holy Spirit, that means I'm not going to think about it again. I'm not going to worry about it again. if that brings up fears, write those fears down and one by one be willing to look at each of those fears with Holy Spirit. This is how we leave no dark cornerstone hidden, which is what the Course is prompting us to do. We're literally not leaving room for the ego to have anything to, you know, harbor. We're not leaving ego room to, you know, attach itself anywhere, because it's like we're picking up all these rocks and exposing the shadow side to the light, which is our fears. We're saying, okay, so I have this fear too. I have this belief. I'm willing to look at this also. So that's just an idea to try, you know, with a piece of paper and the box, just to see, you know, if you can look at the specific fears with spirit, because to me it's always been comforting, this idea of looking at the fear with Holy Spirit rather than looking at it alone. Looking at it alone only increases fear. Another idea, too, is that if you find yourself picking it back up again, this is, I'd say less, yeah, this really isn't from the Course, but this is just something from my own experience that was helpful to me. If I put that piece of paper in the box, and again, that means I'm not going to think about it anymore. If I find myself thinking about it, I have to go get it out of the box, and I can only think about it when I have that piece of paper in my hand. And then I put it, you know, when I'm ready again, I put it back in the box. And it's, yes, it's maybe something that's more of a therapeutic technique, but it gets a little bit cumbersome and tiresome to have to go get it out of that box each time you start thinking about it. So it's like, oh, you know, I'm not going to bother with this right now. So I felt moved to share those things.
Wow.
And does any of that resonate or
all
answer your questions
is,
at all?
Yes, absolutely. All of it. I've been writing as you've been talking, just taking notes.
Oh,
yes,
good.
Thank you so much. So helpful.
You're so
and just,
you're so,
you know,
welcome.
When you're looking at it with the Holy Spirit, when you say, okay, the fears, and you write down the fears with that exercise, and then you look at it with the Holy Spirit, what does that look like? Is it just, you just say, Holy Spirit, you know, help me look at this idea of what it looks like to, like, lose someone.
Yeah, like, I'll literally say, I'll like, hold that idea in my mind, and I'll say, like, to Holy Spirit, okay, like, here's a belief that I'm holding in my mind. You can say a number of things. I want the miracle instead. Here you go. And you can imagine giving that belief to Holy Spirit. I like the idea of looking at it with Holy Spirit, because that, to me, requires even less effort than handing it over, because if Holy Spirit is looking at it with me, Holy Spirit's only going to uphold or preserve what's true. It's only going to uphold the love in that belief in that situation or whatever. The rest, you know, it's going to look right past and not strengthen. So looking at it or handing it over are just two different ways of saying the same thing.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Karen.
Also,
I had something. Oh, sorry.
You're so welcome. Yeah. And first, Paula, then DJ.
I
was going to say something too. We're very talky tonight.
Oh, okay. Paula, DJ, then Sue. in the next 3 minutes.
just one thing I find to be tremendously helpful is to step back and become the observer of these thoughts that are so chaotic. And there's two voices and two choices. And asking, what would God be saying about this? Always helps to put it into perspective for me, because I know God would not be saying, that person is such a jerk, or whatever, or you're not good enough, you're not doing the Course well enough, all of that. That's insanity, and it's the ego, and it loves to get in there and rip us apart. And all I can say is not guilty. Go for it, Deidre.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
I was just going to share, because as I was listening to you talk, Humaira, I was reminded of when I first started studying the Course and how often I would catch myself in a pattern of self-blame. You know, I would feel like I should be somewhere else in my study of the Course than where I actually was. And then I would feel bad that I wasn't further along, and I would just feel like, why am I why am I not experiencing these wonderful things that people are describing to me, and why does it seem so different? And what I learned, and it's been extremely helpful, is instead of jumping to that place where I'm, oh, I should be doing better, or whatever the voice might be telling you at the time, and that's always the ego voice, by the way, it's always the tag voice, is what if right now I'm in the perfect place, I'm in the perfect situation, I'm in the perfect whatever it is for my awakening experience. What if there's nothing else that I need to do? What if I'm doing everything exactly according to my divine lesson plan? And it's just made it so much easier for me to be gentle and then allow the Holy Spirit in to show me another way of looking at whatever I'm looking at.
Oh, God, that's wonderful.
That's beautiful.
That's beautiful, Deidre. Beautiful.
Yeah.
One
so
thing that I've
a reminder to. Oh, go on, Sue.
Excuse me, this is Sue from the course and from and this other things I've read and from this book I mentioned tonight, is that we aren't really doing this. There is one life living itself through, and we are it. So you can't be doing it differently. The only way you can do is by choosing. But whatever you're experiencing, whatever is coming your way, is there because it's where you're supposed to be.
Exactly.
That's it. Like you said, Deidre, I'm experiencing exactly what I'm supposed to be experiencing, and it's given to you as an opportunity for you, for your growth. It's never, never because of something you did wrong. Never.
You can't make a mistake. It's not possible.
No, you can't. You can make maybe a poor choice for you know, but that choice will be presented again. That's all. Because it's always present because it's God is doing the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's love behind everything. Even something that seems absolutely dreadful, love is behind it.
Yeah. And there's
beautiful.
Really this awareness that you're not doing it. That's what I find so beautiful, is when you surrender to the whole idea that there's nothing that needs to be done. There's no doing in anything. When you really have opened yourself up to letting go of all the personality stuff and the concepts of who you think you are, and just let yourself be guided by your inner teacher, by Holy Spirit, whatever word you want to use, angels. It's just a whole other way of living that opens itself like a flower to you. And so whatever it is that you're doing, Humera, you're on the right track.
Thank you. Thank you. It's reassuring. It's reassuring, even though sometimes I feel so lost. All of this has been really reassuring. Thank you.
You're not in this alone. We're all in this together because there's only one of us, and we are waking up. We are waking up. We are remembering the love and the happiness and the joy that we are, and that's absolutely 100% guarantee. The Course is so clear on that that's our absolute birthright, and nothing can stop us from remembering that because it's what we are.
Beautiful.
Thank you, everybody, for such an amazing call. I was just chuckling to myself because this is one of those nights where I think we read only two paragraphs, but worth every share that everybody gave, and absolutely, absolutely beautiful. So I love you all. Big group hug.
Love you,
and
too.
Big
group
hug.
Get together
so much.
Again.
Bye. Thank you,
Corey. Bye, everyone.
Bye, family.
Bye. Carla.
Blessing.
Bye, Carla.
Bye. Bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.